time is fast 9 on the clock. Let me once more welcome all of us back from a very short weekend. we agreed in principle that when we start with our work, in as far as the bills that we are processing are concerned, we will allow the team that is assisting us with the writing and drafting to take us through on what we shall have phrased the previous day. So we are just there. But let me state that it would seem like really we are on correct course. We are doing some good work. As Nicola Barnett was just saying this morning, I also can agree with her that if you check the submission that came, I think we have tried to accommodate many of the issues that were raised, verbatim or in principle. So I think we are on course, and but also we are just emphasizing the importance of submission, that it's not just an issue of a procedure that we must meet, but it's the importance of those submissions that we are taking care of. Surprising enough, this you would think it's something to do with, you know, a Smolanyana unit or an exam there, but I think it is on media. Even this morning I was phoned by some journalists, quite a number of them. They have interest in this bill, particularly the IP bill. And it is quite interesting to note that people out there have interest in our work. So we do value that interaction, and I'm aware that the executive director, I think last week, was also on the SAFM program. I couldn't listen to it. In fact, I think it was yesterday. I had to go to a meeting, but that also is encouraging. You have some work to present to us before we go to chapter 6, which is our next chapter. Very important chapter, if I must say. I think it is. It's going to make or break this book. If we fail in that chapter, we shall have failed this book. So we just can't fail, but this committee won't fail. But let's do our, let's take the presentation on those issues that we said you must attend to before we then go to chapter 6. Executive Director.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody, all the members. And I mean, I will also indicate the changes that have been requested by the members and also the proposals from the team. And there's also a lot of team members behind this, so they must also please come in at any time if I'm not correct in terms of the presentation. There's two documents that's been made available, Chair. The one document is the clauses that's been looked after in terms of clearing up uncertainties and proposed amendments by the committee. That's the one document, and that ranges from clauses 1 to clauses 21, and I'll go through that in a moment. And then there's a second document. I think they're also making more copies of that. There was the suggestion by the members regarding an alternative chapter 7. In terms of the advice we got on Sunday and yesterday also from the state law advisors, maybe from a flowing perspective, it would be better to continue that in terms of dealing with that under Chapter 3 as alternative, but if it must be in a separate chapter, of course, there's also an alternative proposal in terms of the reporting, the obligations of SAP members. So that is the other substantial document that the committee asked for, and that's also been circulated. Yes, Chair. Then, if I can then go to the proposed amendments by the committee members. On page 2 of the proposed amendments, clause 1, I think we dealt with the Municipal Police Service. Also, the question of the Secretariat and the Secretary. Then there was, Chair, a discussion, and one of the members also requested that we get a definition on security clearance certificate from NIA legislation. But we've consulted yesterday very much with NIA. We've even looked at the MIS. There is no definition in the National Intelligence Act or even in the MIS of an exact definition that we can refer to in terms of legislation. So we've sticked with the wording there, and I mean it's up to members if they want something different. But our approach is to propose that security clearance certificate means official document issued by the executive director indicating the degree of security competence of a person. So unfortunately we couldn't get any, there isn't any other definition in any legislation available. And even the MIS in Chapter 5 doesn't refer to a definition of a security clearance certificate. So that's the option then we put on the table there, Chair. Then, Chair, on page 3, yeah, I think we referred already to that in our previous presentation. Clause 2 is again the question of the branches that we dealt with. Then also the financing of the directors by Parliament. Those clause 3 issues we've referred to also in the previous session. Then clause 5 is in consultation with the Parliamentary Committee. Then the appointment again, term of 5 years with additional one. And then the whole question of the vacancy that was discussed in quite detail on page 5 from line 17 up and including line 19. When the executive director is unable to perform the functions of office or during a vacancy in the directorate, the minister may designate another person to act as executive director until the executive director returns to perform the functions of the office or the vacancy is filled. So we try there to address the concerns of the members.
Chairperson, if we can go back to clause 5, the suggested amendment from page 3. Clause 5.1.1. The minister must nominate a suitably qualified person for appointment to the office of the executive director to head the director in accordance that we set in accordance to a process to be determined by the minister, because we, you remember we had the discussion to say that the minister, there is a panel that is appointed by ministers which consists out of other ministers, DGs from other departments, etc. That process of appointment is not a parliamentary process. So this that says in consultation with the relevant parliamentary committee is wrong, should come out. The next point, to address the role of parliament in it. I just think it we had this discussion last week.
So what is suggested?
Yes, Chair, now we will take that on board, no, definitely.
Okay.
And we will come back to the committee tomorrow with that correct wording.
It is not necessary to come back to us with a procedure to determine by the minister and then take out in consultation with the relevant parliamentary committee. No parliamentary committee is involved in the process that the minister must follow in that. The next point addressed parliament's role.
Yes, Chair, that's good.
If I recall correctly, we said we would put commas there, so it would make it clearer, but I don't think it really matters as long as the committee has the ability to reject the nomination, which is covered in.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. We will do that. Then, going back, I think, to page 4, we spoke about the unableness of the ED to perform its functions, and in the case of the vacancy, the process. That's on page 4. Gotcha. If everybody's happy, then clause 6 was those grammatical and style and also form amendments.
You seem to be saying something, but I don't know what you're saying. Please continue.
Yeah, the chair, should I go to each sentence? Okay. Right, on page 5 of the book. In line 31, after approved to omit and approval. Then on page 5 in line 33, after act, to insert and. There was a discussion that the annual report should be the responsibility of the executive director. Then on page 5 of the line 33, to insert the following paragraph, the annual report is prepared as contemplated in section 29.
The only one, I'm lost. Can you please tell me where you are?
On page 5, after line 33, there's a D coming in to indicate that in terms of the financial and other reporting responsibilities, the annual report is prepared. So after the C, there will be a D. That's contemplated in section 29. Right, Chair. Then, Chair, on page 5, in line 46, I think there was a lot of discussion on that, to omit may and to substitute with must. And then on page 5, from line 46, to omit matters investigated by the Directorate under this Act and to substitute criminal offences revealed by the outcome of an investigation, as proposed by the members. Thank you, Chair. Chair, then point 6 on page 5, after line 47, to insert the following subsection, and that deals with our question of the NPA as well as referrals of disciplinary matters and referral to the Minister. And I'll just read the text. The new 5, once a decision to prosecute is taken, the Executive Director must notify the Minister of the National Prosecuting Authority's decision to prosecute. 6, the Executive Director must ensure that complaints regarding disciplinary matters are referred to the National Commissioner and, where appropriate, the Provincial Commissioner. 7, once a month, the Executive Director must submit to the Minister a summary of the disciplinary matters and a copy thereof to the Secretary. And then 8, all recommendations which are not of a criminal or disciplinary nature must be referred to the Minister and a copy thereof to the Secretary.
fine. Except that we have the Minister of National Prosecuting Authority. Yes.
No, thank you, Chair. We will do the necessary then. Then clause 7. That's still on page 5. And then going to page 6. The national office. I think we spoke about that last time. And to substitute with the following subsection, the national office consists of the executive director who controls the office, corporate services unit, investigation and information management unit, legal services unit, and any other unit subject to the approval of the minister and parliament. And then to the executive director must appoint members at the national office. Then, Chair, point 2 there on page 6. From line 5. It was also discussed in the committee at great length, up and including 8 to omit subsection 3 and to substitute with the following subsections. A person may not be appointed as a member of the national office unless information with respect to that member has been gathered in appropriate security screening investigation as prescribed by the minister. And then 4. The security screening investigation contemplated in subsection 15 must be done in conjunction with the National Intelligence Agency as referred to in section 3 of the Intelligence Service Act 2001, number 65 of 2002.
And I know we discussed this at huge length, but I'm just trying to look at the practicalities. Who then is responsible for the initial gathering of information as contemplated in 3? Unless information has been gathered, who is that to be gathered by? Sorry, it's just interesting.
I mean, that will be prescribed by the regulations, but in terms of practice, for example, the initial screening information like the ID, you know, those qualifications, when a person applies, that will become to the department. Now, we've got a service level agreement with the service provider that's been cleared by NIA. They do that, but the actual vetting will be done by NIA. But that will be in the regulations, in detail. Then, Chair, still on page 6, in line 9. In line 9, after 8 to insert security clearance. And then in line 6, in line 9, after certificate to omit of appointment. So it will be issued a security clearance. And then on page 5, on page 6, in line 16, after 8 to insert security clearance. And then on page 6, in line 20, after the, to insert also security clearance in place of the certificate. Then she on clause 8.
It now reads, for instance, line 9, the executive director must issue a security clearance or not certificate.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, if you simply replace security clearance, what it then says is issue a security clearance of appointment. So take out of appointment. Oh, that was, I'm sorry, I was looking on 9-9 earlier. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, thank you.
No, security clearance certificate, sorry, no. Security clearance certificate. Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Chairperson, I think it would be more helpful if the executive director read the new sentence after omitting something, because sometimes it gets lost, you know. Omit something, then you read the new sentence.
Right. Thank you for that, Reverend. Chair, then in clause 8, on page 6, in line 36,
executive director after consultation with the National Intelligence Agency may withdraw a security clearance certificate.
That's correct, Chair. That's correct.
Yeah, it will be the same thing on line 20.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Then we go to clause 8. The question of the NEC, I think members raised the question in line 36. Previously it was report to an NEC, but members felt that it should be report to the relevant NEC on matters referred to the executive director by the NEC. Right, Chair, then on page 6, in line 40.
I think the intention was to take out provincial, just to cover cases where the NEC reported to the provincial or the executive director. So, I mean, if the NEC reports to the provincial office, then they must get feedback from the provincial office. If they report to the ED, then they must get feedback from the ED. At the moment, you seem to have taken out provincial, or will that be covered by the ED?
We took it to the duties of the states, and we will come to that. Thank you, Chair. Then on page 6 in line 40, 40 to omit, to mit and. That's after this act. So that and is omitted. And on page 41, line 41, after minister, you insert and. And on page 6, after line 41, because this will now follow the and, to insert the following paragraphs, functions of the National Office, members requested it, make recommendations to the South African Police Service resulting from investigations done by them, and then 2, report twice a year to Parliament on the number of cases and the outcome thereof in the new N.
The new M, suggests that we rather say make recommendations to the South African Police Service resulting from investigations done by the Directorate. Because if we say by them, it seems like we're talking about subs.
But, Chair, that's a good suggestion.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm just a bit concerned that about N. On the number of cases, I'm not sure that we just want the number of cases. I probably wanted more detail as to what cases exactly in detail. I don't know whether we should have that kind of detail in the report or not, but it can make it quite difficult for us to oversee what has been submitted and how long it's taking and so on, if we haven't got more than just the number of cases in the outcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Now, I agree with the Honourable Chair, who we actually had the discussion, but we said that we can leave it like it is, because if you read the bill, in the end it says that the regulations must come back to Parliament, and that we would put the detail about how these reports should look in the regulations. So we said let's limit it here, but that when the regulations come to Parliament, that we clear about what it is that we want them to report on.
I would just suggest adding a few words. Report twice a year to Parliament on the number of cases, the details and the outcome thereof. So at least you know there are X number of rape cases, X number of murder, X number, because if it's simply the number, you can say there were 2,000 and 180 were dealt with, and that's it. So we do actually need to just detail, you know, basic detail. Thank you. until we become a dinner relation. I think it's...
I just want to remind ourselves as well that we actually talk here about you will remember why this point came up. The point came up because people were saying, what happens to recommendations that are made to SAP? And it actually doesn't cover the criminal cases like rape, etc., etc. This is supposed to be the disciplinary cases. It was also those issues that were raised by the unions, where they said that the current ITD is scared to do investigations against senior police officers, or reluctant to do so. And that is why we brought this point in. It's actually not part of your reports in terms of your general criminal investigations. Because in any case, criminal investigations, prosecution takes longer than the year that we are talking, twice a year, it won't happen. So I'm just bringing that point, that we don't plow for two issues. This is actually dealing with the recommendations made to such, with other words, where there are no criminal charges that are put by the public prosecutor.
Yeah. Yes. But I think adding the case would still be fine, because, yeah.
See, the current thing should stay like it is.
What we're suggesting is that it says report twice a year to Parliament on the number of cases, the details, and outcomes thereof.
The details.
Chair, would it not be better to rather say as follows, report twice a year to Parliament on the number of recommendations made to the South African Police Services and the outcome thereof?
The details
and the outcome thereof. Instead of cases.
Number of
recommendations.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say. Report twice a year to Parliament on the recommendations and detail thereof made to the South African Police Services and the outcome thereof. I've amended my amendment. Report twice a year to Parliament on the number of recommendations, the detail thereof, and the outcome. The detail and outcome thereof. Okay. Well, let's get a legal perspective.
Madam Chair, my concern with that is that we need to see what cases have been referred to the ITD. And if we say recommendations, then we're only going to get the ones that they come out. Or will it include, if they say no, there's nothing to be done, will that still be included in the recommendation? I just don't want there to be an option for them not to give us details of every case that was reported to them.
Easy enough. It's the report twice a year on the number of cases, the recommendations, the details thereof, details and outcome thereof.
So what we are now saying, report twice a year to Parliament on the number of cases, recommendations, the details and outcomes thereof.
Got that? Then, Chair, we move to Clause 10. Maybe just to indicate to the members for the reason for that substitution of 6, remember that we will also be delegating NPA prosecutions to the provincial heads. So we don't want to exclude that from the delegation. So we actually omit 6 and it substitutes with 6, 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Yeah, maybe let's go to the top of page 7 of the bill. The executive director may not delegate any of the powers, functions, or duties referred to in section 6. Now, in terms of the current section 6, included there is referrals to the NPA. But, I mean, we don't want a situation where all those cases are to, you know, delegate, you know, is within the privy of the executive director. From a practical point of view, your provinces must be able also to refer to the provincial DPPs. So that's really the motive for that change.
I just want to make doubly sure now that we're not losing 7, 20, 22, 28, 2, 29, 1, 1 and 2, 31 of this Act. Okay. I'll believe them when I see the final version of the bill.
Page 7 of the document, in line 24, regarding the functioning of the directorate, in line 24, I will just read the sentence as it should read now, in line 24, to identify any other matter of strategic importance within each province, importance to the functioning of the directorate. So after province, to ensure, to insert the functioning of the directorate.
Do not just rather put to the functioning of the strategic importance. So say strategic importance to the functioning of the directorate within each province.
So Chief must read to identify any other matter of strategic importance to the functioning of the directorate within each province. Right? Right, then on page 7, in line 27, to omit matters of...
I think that's in 1D. No, it's that in Roman Fica D. Roman Fica 4D.
Now to raise matters of national interest.
I think we talked about a national management issue.
Yeah.
The executive director is not reading the second part of it as well. And I think that's what Reverend Advocate Meshe's request. Was that in fact they read to us the new concept, because now it should read matters interest and substituted with management issues, the point 3. It's there. They must read us the whole new sentence.
Now, D, Chief 13D should read to raise national management issues.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Then, Chair, we go to clause 16 on page 7 in line 42. The executive director or secretary may invite, in consultation with one another, any person not mentioned in subsection 1 to a meeting of the forum.
One of the suggestions in one of the submissions suggested that as a standard procedure an executive or high up person within the NPA should, as a matter of course, be on this body. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it just seems that they're going to be discussing cases, or and it would assist perhaps to have someone from the NPA there to have a legal mind in there, as a matter of course, just a thought.
Chair, I would warn against that. I saw that in the submissions as well, for the simple reason of the independence of the NPA. In the end, the NPA must make the decisions on whether they are going to prosecute or not. And this is not a place where they are going to discuss issues of criminal nature in any case. I mean, this is a place where they're going to discuss issues of where the secretary's got to report back in terms of progress made by subs, etc. So I really don't think we must contaminate them. This doesn't exclude them inviting somebody, even from Treasury or from the Auditor General's office or from wherever, if they need to do so. And I think we must leave it at that.
I think we had the lengthy discussion on this one, and we agreed that let's not prescribe other entities or people further. Let them invite them as and when it is necessary. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. We will then go to clause 17 on page 8. And then on page 8, yeah, in line 5, after discuss, to insert the word at least. So it will read, discuss at least trends, recommendations, and implementation of recommendations. And then on page 8, in line 7, to omit paragraph C, the current one, and to submit with the following paragraph C, discuss relevant areas emanating from investigations conducted by the directorate and research conducted by the secretariat.
Yes.
Recommendations and implementation of recommendations, and discuss relevant areas emanating from investigations conducted by the directorate and research conducted by the secretariat. I remember the discussion was on further investigations or special investigations or what have you, to be conducted by IPD, who should do this, is it this forum? I mean, we were trying to address that one. If I'm not very sure whether this is talking to that. Can we discuss it?
We took out initiate. And then we were throwing around words like introduce, investigations, discuss, and then I think we ended up on discuss investigations, because we all, obviously, the secretariat's got nothing to do with introducing investigations, as they quite rightly pointed out. But I have about 7 different words that we went through here, all of them crossed out. It kind of came down to pretty much what we've got here.
Chairperson, not arguing the point of whether the secretariat can ask for investigations or not, because we've already given that right to the secretary and the minister and the MECs to do. The point here is that we said it's issues of common interest that might result in, if you remember the discussion, that might be because of investigations that the IPED has done. They might ask the secretariat to follow up on certain issues. The secretariat themselves might also, because of the research that they've done, request that they look at something. And I think the problem is that we have discussed twice, and we can actually drop the discuss in C, because we've got and relevant areas emanating from investigations conducted by the directorate and research conducted by the secretariat. So just drop that second discuss and the C, because we, yeah, just drop the discuss and the C. I mean, we hope they're not going to sit there and have a meeting around sport. I mean, it should be around issues that consider both of them.
What you are suggesting, contributed, the functions of the forum are to, one, A, facilitate closer cooperation between the secretary and the executive director. B, discuss at least trends, recommendations, and implementation of recommendations. And C, unfortunately, let's discuss does not cover C. It doesn't. C is a standalone. It would cover it if it was functions of the forum are to discuss, yes, then, but otherwise it doesn't.
If you just put the word other before relevant, or any other before relevant, so that
B covers it. Why? To discuss would be, if it covered everything else, would be at the beginning of the sentence. We're to discuss. A, B, C. But the fact that it's discussed, is, you know, in A, it doesn't refer to discuss, B, it does, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it relates to C as well. So I would say we leave the discussing. I don't think math makes any difference. We can still add the other as well. So discuss other matters.
What's scrapping C? I think it doesn't cover. Maybe it does not. In fact, the functions of the forum are two. That covers all these A, B, C. To facilitate for A, discuss for B, and do what? For C.
I think we're getting extremely technical, and I think we must get the state law advisors and the team just to come back with what is correctly, because I think we're all reading it differently.
Mm.
And for once, Ms. Kulabana and I agree, because I think the fact that and is there is covered by B, discuss and discuss. Because your difference between 17A and B is the fact that it says, it ends with director, then it says discuss, and then it's and. So I really think we're getting technical. They can just have a look at it and come back to us in terms of what it should be. I won't die for any of these.
We need to get technical because that's how interpretation of legislation works. It's a challenge. So I agree we need to get to say those lines, but I mean, we need to just understand what we actually wanted to say. And then, because why do you want to take out the and? I'm not sorry, Madam Chair, to you.
See altogether.
Altogether, no.
That's
what we wanting the secretariat to be able to do research, or we're not wanting to discuss it, or quite what? Because then we get to say exactly what we mean.
Mm.
It's kind of an intricate picture of your
speaker.
Okay.
State law
advice. Thank you, Chair. I think we'll discuss it and then we'll come back to the committee on this one.
Very much, that's your pick for today. You know, the Honorable Julek George is so quiet this morning.
George is going to apply for that.
The last issue on page 7, clause 21, and that deals with the responsibilities of the provincial head. On page 8, after line 41, to include the following paragraph, to refer matters investigated by the provincial office under this act to the national or relevant provincial prosecuting authority for criminal prosecution. So that's to ensure that they can do that. And then also on page 8 of the line 51, to insert the following paragraph, to report to the relevant MEC on matters referred to the provincial head by the MEC. So that deals with the provincial responsibility. See, that is the first document. And then the second document deals with the proposal for a separate section or separate chapter. the state law advisors has indicated from a technical perspective, maybe it will be better to follow the current clause 9, but I mean it's up to the committee to decide that, and I'll just then speak to the proposal from our side in terms of the obligations of members of SAPS, because I think that was the big debate. Mr. George referred to the teeth of the bill, and I think that speaks to that issue. And now, in terms of the proposal, I'll go through it in total, Chair, or what? Or should I go clause by clause? In total, yes. The first proposal is that on reporting and cooperation by members of SAPS, the issue of the current priority areas in Section 25 dealing with rape, torture, death in police custody. And so the proposal is in 10.1 that the station commissioner or a member of the South African Police Service or Municipal Police Service must, immediately after becoming aware, notify the directorate of any matters referred to in Section 25. And B, within 24 hours thereafter, submit a written report to the directorate in the prescribed form and manner of any matter as contemplated in paragraph 1.
Just looking at the document before us, I think before we actually go into the detail, there are two options here that are given to us. So one is to have this come in clause 10 and be incorporated. This is in clause 10. The other option that they give, if I look on page 4 of this document, is an alternative that puts it in as a standalone chapter. And I would want to suggest, before we go into the actual detail, that we sort out whether we want to have it included just as another clause, or do we want this as a standalone chapter. And I would want to argue and submit that this should be a standalone chapter and not be included into Section 10.
So, yeah, I would like to support, because I just think it would make more sense if we just resolve this issue. I hear what the executive director is saying, and I hear what the state law advisors are saying in terms of it following reporting on cases, etc. I don't necessarily agree with that, because here we are not talking about the reporting lines. The reporting lines that we talk under 8 and 9 is in terms of the role and responsibility of National Office of the IPAT. It is not in terms of and their responsibility to Parliament, their responsibility to the Minister, etc., etc. What we want here, and I think it's important that we separate it completely, is a new chapter, and I don't even agree to where they want to put it in. I would say logically, it follows that one should put it after Chapter 6, where you've dealt with investigators, with their responsibilities, their powers, etc., and that we have a new Chapter 7 that deals with, and that makes it strong, and that says reporting and obligations of the SAPS Police Service and the Municipal Police. Why are we trying to hide this? I mean, I think it's important. We all talk about giving the legislation teeth. This is the teeth that we are talking about. We get the complaints that SAPS ignore the recommendations, etc. Here we are giving it, and I think what we need to do is have a separate chapter. And the suggestion that I would make in support of Mr. Schneeman is that the Honourable Schneeman is that we look at the separate chapter, and that chapter follows Chapter 6 after we are done with the powers and the functions of the investigators, appointments, powers, functions. We then get to the obligations, the onus on SAPS, and that we look at that.
Chapter on its own, which I think I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I once again agree with Honourable Annelies van Wyk, which I do so often. I think a new Chapter 7 inserted here. I don't like this called reporting and cooperation by members, but I really think, you know, we've been calling for exactly this for so long. This is the crux of this whole entire process. And to just have it tagged on elsewhere just doesn't do it for me. I really do think, and I don't actually care about how difficult it is to lay out a new chapter, etc. That's not my problem. I think a new chapter 7 and just shunt the rest down numerically. It's spot on.
And if we agree, which it seems like it is, then I would suggest that instead of dealing with it now, that we deal with chapter 6. And first go through that. Let's look at it logically. Let's do chapter 6, change what we want to change there, and then get to this as chapter 7. So they can basically present this to us after we're done with 6.
That's the first option suggested by your good self. Is rejected by the members, unfortunately. But thank you for raising it. We therefore are saying we want a chapter on this one, which is quite important. Reporting obligation accept this. Surely it must find its way into this job. Yes, and I think it is important that we have it. And the suggestion is that we therefore go to chapter 6 now. When we then we deal with this, we'll come back and make a presentation on it. And thank you very much for the presentation on the work that we gave you on Friday. We therefore are on chapter 6 now.
That's what we've agreed to in terms of a standalone chapter and the importance of giving teeth. It's actually in line with the press conference that I heard the ICD had yesterday. I was listening on SAFM this morning, and there was some press conference that was held. And the ICD was saying that they were hoping that Parliament would give the new body some teeth. So I think it's in line with their request. I just thought I'd just mention that because I listened to their press conference this morning.
To bite, you know. How poisonous that is, people do it, you know. Okay, human bite. We're talking about it, dog bite. Okay, we're going to chapter 6 now. It's our work for today. We have got to cover all this chapter. So it will depend on the place that we remove. Okay, we are on appointment of investigators, clause 22.1. The executive director in consultation with the provincial head must appoint a fit and proper person as an investigator of the directorate subject to subsection 2 and 3. I think we accept that. A person appointed as an investigator, A, must have at least grade 12 certificate or a relevant diploma or degree, and,
I don't think we can in any way, shape or form equate a matric certificate with a diploma or degree. So one needs a matric, a grade 12 certificate and a relevant diploma or degree. You can't say you can't have a degree without a diploma, a matric certificate in any case. I mean, it's impossible. So you need the one and the other. So to have a matric or a degree is quite bizarre. So it's saying that a matric is the equivalent of a degree, which it most certainly is not. So I think we need to say at least a grade 12 certificate and a relevant diploma or degree.
What it says is that you might have a grade 12, period, and no late and relevant experience of criminal investigation. Knowledge and relevant experience or legal process. Then you might also have a diploma, and you might have a degree, and I think that is why it's all. Honorable,
No, you're right. We had this discussion even in the public hearings. We've made the point that a very good investigator, and I mean this doesn't say they must be appointed on the same level either. It doesn't say that the guy with the matric must be appointed at the same level as the guy with the certificate or the degree. It's simply, you will remember when we had the public hearings, we referred to Piet Bylefeld, for instance, who's considered to be the best detective. Is now retiring or has retired or whatever, who's got a matric, and that it doesn't necessarily mean when you've got a degree that you are going to be, or diploma, a good investigator.
And we just want to open the door for the ICD as well, or for IPED, to actually also employ good investigators who only have matric certificates. And that's what we do. And I think I hear what Ms. Kulabana is saying in terms of equating the one to the other. I don't think that is what we're doing here. In any case, I think the Public Service Act would come into play in terms of the qualifications of the individuals, in terms of the rank, and I see this agreement on that side, in terms of the ranks that they will be appointed on as investigators. And I think we must be careful to cut people that will be good investigators because they've got just matric.
I think there is a must-have. So I might have my grade 12 certificate. I must have that grade 12 certificate or a degree or a diploma, but I must have knowledge and relevant experience of criminal investigation. I must have. So over and above that, it could be that I don't have a degree on any of these. I don't have a diploma, but I have a grade 12 certificate at this. So it talks to my experience.
I understand absolutely now, but what I'm not quite comfortable with is having this open-ended. What is considered to be relevant experience or knowledge? It, you know, in most job applications, it would say you must have this or 5 years experience in your relevant area of expertise. It just says knowledge and what is relevant. You know, relevant is such a subjective word. So 5 years experience, 2 years experience, what, I don't know, perhaps we need to ask what they're looking for in this regard. But I think that's too open-ended there. I mean, it could be you've worked on the job for 2 weeks. Now you say, okay, I'm an experienced criminal investigator. What makes you experienced? Is it 1 year or 5 years? I don't know. I don't know the degree of which they need experience. You understand?
Mr. Chairperson, I hear what the Honourable Member is saying, and I think I agree with her, because you cannot have a degree without a matric. Now, if you, we say you must have at least matric, automatically that will not exclude a person with a degree. If a person with a degree is appointed, I think just saying must have at least matric, you are automatically including a person that has a degree. So why should we also have the degree in the same sentence? If we drop the word degree, that doesn't exclude a person with a degree, because you cannot have a degree without matric.
Okay.
Chet, more on a just the issue that Honourable Meshwe has raised now, you can actually have a degree without a matric, because there is allowance given. If you don't have a matric, I think it's a certain number of years or a certain age that you are then allowed to actually do a degree through university.
Again, I want us to be careful to try and define relevant experience in terms of numbers of years. Yeah, I don't think this is where it should be done. It's done in the Public Service Act. It determines the level of appointment, etc. It's there. There are criteria. So I think we must leave it open enough. You also have different levels of investigators within IPED, and we mustn't close the door for them even to bring in another level lower or another level higher than what in the middle or somewhere that is than what they currently have. So I would say let's leave it as is.
So we're leaving this as is. It's important that we have a common understanding on it. Okay. Go to 3 now. 3, a person may not be appointed as an investigator, unless you know I don't have my sunglasses. My glasses. My reading glasses. So I see sometimes I don't see, unless information with respect to that person has been buried in a security investigation. I think this will need some rewording so that it is in line with what we have said in the past. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would say, that the wording needs to be in line with what we brought in terms of clause 7, 2, 3, and 4.
of to attend to that, okay? For the executive director official so delegated by him or her must issue a certificate of appointment in respect of such a person. It's the same thing. Any investigator may from time to time at such regular intervals as the executive director may determine be subjected to a further security screen. I think we've dealt with that as well. Okay? A person may be discharged from his or her position as an investigator if he or she failed to conform to the security clearance prescripts. An investigator is given policing powers contemplated in section 34(2) within 3 months after his or her appointment.
Yeah, there was a question here about this, and it might be laid out somewhere, but why the 3 month delay? Is this like a probation period? What is the 3 months? Either you have it or you don't. So I'm not too sure why there's why the powers are held back for 3 months after receiving that. Yes, we could be on.
See, I
I'm telling here and I'm assisted by
the thing is that insofar as my understanding is, and I'm not sure the state law advisors need to come in here as well, policing powers in terms of this is given to these people by the Minister of Police, and therefore you need to give time for the Minister of Police to actually sign the certificates or the policing powers, whatever it's called. I don't know whether it's a certificate or whether it's a letter or whatever it is, and it's simply that period of time that the head office, national office, needs to prepare, forward to the minister, back to them to do it. Look, can I say, if we can do it in 90 days, we would actually do brilliantly. Because the fact of the matter is, and it has been one of the shortcomings, members who have been here previously will know, that sometimes investigators have waited up to 2 years to get policing powers. It's the truth.
Well, I'm very happy now that there is a period, because the biggest challenge in ICD was the time the ministers were taking to give this policing power. And I think 3 months to me is reasonable, because in the past we have a problem, they take sometimes 2 years, before the powers are given. So I think to me this 3 months is reasonable. Caters for all the administrative work, also the minister to do certain things, but it also limits the minister not to go beyond this 90 days. I think this is reasonable. Speaking from where it used to be, where sometimes a year, 2 years passes before these powers are given.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Yeah, you see, the document, a person may be discharged from his or her duties. I wanted my honorable panelist to comment on this one.
I think it is the ICD that should comment on that one. If they want to, he's asking for your comment on clause 6.
I agree. You see, these people have been trained and appointed as investigating officers. So if they say they may, it means they may not be fired, and they have failed security clearance. What are they going to do with them? What I'm saying, if they say they may, it means they may not. What are they going to do with it?
So it wasn't just a stretching exercise.
That is really a condition of service matter. I mean, for instance, and that's maybe the current problem also with the security clearance prescripts, people must within a certain time submit documents. They must make themselves available maybe for other tests. They must submit names of people that can talk to their character and so on. And that usually delays the matter. Now, you can't have that open-ended. So there should be, I mean, if there's not, you know, prescription in terms of the miss, there should be in terms of the service conditions be something of that nature in the legislation. Maybe, Chair, just to talk on the question of policing powers as well that was referred to. I think I must just, again, the practical issue, take members a step back. Remember, one of the current criteria for granting policing powers is clearance at the level of secret. So, of course, so the vetting is very much linked to the policing powers. No policing powers can be given to a member if his clearance is not at secret level. So 3 months, I think, is very optimistic, but I think we should keep it there to ensure that there's the necessary, you know, very tight timelines.
The executive director is now unnecessarily confusing us and the issue. Vetting happens before policing powers are given. What we're saying here is once that vetting has been done, everything is correct, and the minister needs to give the policing powers. What we're saying is we are telling the minister you don't have more than 90 days to do that. That is what it says. And I think we must leave it at that. We've passed the point of how long the vetting process takes, etc. And the executive director said to us last week, he spoke to NIA, etc., etc. This is a separate issue. It's a condition of getting the policing powers. But what we say is once the executive director has done everything, the vetting has been done, all that needs to do to happen now is the signing of the policing powers, then acting thereof by the minister. We give the minister 90 days, and I think we must leave it at that. But I've got another question I wanted to raise. But the Mr. Legetus and Mr. George's question I think is relevant as well. Is it a question of when somebody is not getting, with other words, here we are not talking about the period of time that it takes because of the fault, or because of NIA having a backlog or whatever. Here we are talking about the fact that the person fails that clearance. Is that not a question of that he must then be removed as an investigator? That is what I think what Mr. George is asking, is whether it shouldn't be, Mr. Legetus was asking and Mr. George supporting, is that it must be removed. It must be a condition of if he can't pass the clearance, he must be removed as an investigator. Because if it's a prerequisite that you be appointed an investigator, get policing powers because you've got a secret clearance, if you fail that, surely you must be allowed to, you must allow the organization to remove you. I'm just asking a question, I don't know the answer.
My assumption is that when the advertisement is made, it is stated clearly that it is subject to security clearance. So that's why I'm asking, if you now, this person has failed, why not remove it? Because even your condition, what do you want to do with it? Because you still have, if this person has failed, you still have to advertise for his or her own. What do you want to do with this person?
Or must. Mr. Pipman? So what we are actually saying is that must be a must. Honorable Annelies?
Mr. Legetu and Mr. George have sidetracked me because I actually wanted to go, and I'm sorry for this, but I wanted us to go back to 22.1 and 2. In terms of in the appointment of the executive director, we put an obligation on minister if that position becomes vacant to fill it in a certain period of time. Now, the same for me goes in terms of the appointment where there's a vacancy within a province, because we also know, Jefferson, that we've gone through, now Mr. Beekman can say that, and I agree, it's not in his term, but the fact of the matter is we need to legislate that vacancies in provinces where provincial heads are concerned are also filled timeously. Because we say that in terms of the executive director, but these offices in the provinces run by the leadership of the provincial head. And I would say that we need a similar clause. We don't have to talk about what the details, they can come back to us. A similar clause in one or two, or wherever they feel it must go in, that say that this position must be filled within a time frame, like we've done with the executive director. We don't want acting people at provincial level as well.
That is on appointment of provincial head. Okay. Your homework again. Okay. Let's proceed with checking that. You're going to come back and give us information. But already we have a principal. We said there must be time frame for the executive director of acting and vacancies and so on, and that is the principle that we want brought in here at provincial level. So if you can just draft something to that effect.
That will be in clause 20.
Sure, yeah, can I just say, they're trying to be decent, Mr. Beersman, less so than the rest. By not saying to me that I'm talking nonsense, because it shouldn't be in 22. It's where it's appointment of the provincial aid. It's 20.
It's 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 20. Okay. It's definitely 20. The appointment of provincial aid. Okay. So we're done with 22. We're moving on to 23. Remuneration and conditions of service of investigators. We said they must write something. Honorable George, Honorable Chief.
Okay, madam, of course, I know I put this from the very beginning. I still don't understand why you put this discussion in the first place. If you want to talk about remuneration, and restrict it to the level of detectives and so on. I'm assuming also that remuneration and conditions of service of all civil servants are determined by the Public Service Act. So my view is that I don't see why we should have this. Because I want ICTU to have an ability to appoint best, especially they must be able to appoint the best, and to appoint the best, they must be able also to have the space of if they want the best, they're going to have to pay a salary that is attractive.
And Chair, that was what I think we were going to suggest putting in there in the second line, that must be at least on par with members.
Chair, Mr. George has been raising this issue from the beginning, but he's never been listening to the arguments around this issue. The fact of the matter is that what we're saying here is exactly what Ms. Schaefer is now saying, that it be at least at that level. You can even reword it to say it mustn't be less than that of detectives. And the reason for that is, I'm raising it again. It's easy to say, come in and say, we've got investigators at this and this and this level. And can I just say, the levels that they have are also wrong. A person on the director level is we can go there in an argument. But the fact of the matter is, there are different bands as well within the detective services. And again, we go back to the point where we say,